Just started. So this is Hudson Vaughn and Maggie West with Miss Emily Banks. And today's date is February the 17th, 2011. And we're at Miss Banks's residence. And what's the Kensington Trace. And and we're talking about her life and her journey here and her family history. And so, yeah, we'll just start it there. Now we'll put this aside and you can just get started. Yeah, we want to hear about your family.
Okay. Like I said, not all people from here came here. I don't have any family here living or dead.
Okay.
In the South at all.
Any extended, like family above?
None.
Oh, really?
At all.
Okay.
My family came from the West Indies, and this my maternal grandmother was Cuban.
Okay. And what was her name?
Her name was Teresa.
Okay.
And she came from Cuba and migrated to Dominica, where she married my grandfather.
Okay.
And they migrated here along with another sister. When they got to this country, they were told that the sister's papers were not in order.
Uh-huh.
And they had to pay, you know, under the table for her papers to be in order. And my grandfather, being a man of means, went ahead and paid them. When they got to the next checkpoint, the people sent her back.
Thing.
And instead of sending her back to Dominica, they sent her to Cuba.
Mm.
Yeah.
They were, my grandmother was devastated. She never got back up with her sister until the day she died, and it was just devastating to her. She never left New York.
Mm-hmm.
So this was my grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. And so she was Spanish heritage?
She was Spanish. She was Cuban.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at her and tell.
And what had brought them to the United States?
Everybody back then was coming to the United States for to make a better life.
Do you know about when
Cuba
that was?
Wasn't a, oh gosh.
Was this like early 1900s? Or?
84 and my mother was 83 when she died.
Mm-hmm.
This was before she was born. So that was in the early 1900s.
Okay, wow.
Okay.
And they went straight to New York?
They lived in Florida. My mother and her sisters and brothers, they had children.
Mm-hmm.
They had four children, two boys and two girls. They went to New York. And this grandmother worked for Nabisco, who makes cookies.
Oh, wow.
Until she was 65 and passed when she was 66.
Mm.
She lived in the house with us. And
so you knew her?
Of course. We lived in the house with her.
Yeah, that's what it knows.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is a picture of my father and mother. My father's people came from Trinidad in the West Indies. And that's my mother.
That was her doing.
Yeah, that's what everybody says.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And how did they meet, do you know?
They met in New York. My father my father's family was kind of well-to-do back then. They came here owning brownstones in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And they lived there. And my brother still owns the house, so the house is still there. And they were from, like I said, from Trinidad, and they were all very educated people, and made their home New York.
And did
so
you
my
know
mother
his...
met them when they went to New York.
What were their names? What were your parents' names?
My father's name was Edward Primus, Primus, and my mother Virginia.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. And did you know his parents at all?
Yes.
Your father, so you
mm-hmm.
knew?
Yeah, I knew his parents. His parents didn't die. His father died when I was very young. I'd say maybe second grade.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But his mother didn't die until I had my third child. So I was.
Oh wow!
You know, although yes, I knew them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you a little bit
so
about them.
She was a great grandmother. She got to see.
She
some
was
of her
a great grandmother.
Grandchildren.
This grandmother never got to see any of us grow up. She died when I was 11.
Okay, but you lived with her until.
But
then.
She lived with us.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
We had a three-story house, and in New York, and she lived on the second floor.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is my mother's baby sister. My mother, unfortunately, outlived her whole family, and she outlived her siblings, and she was, my mother was the oldest. Mm-hmm. And she outlived everyone. This is my mother in school. She was the only black in her class. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that when I went to school, I was the only black in my class.
Really?
So it just shows you how history can
repeat
itself.
This is in New York that she was in
school? This was in New York. No, this was in, yeah, this was in New York.
And do you know what that school was?
I forgot what the name of the school was.
So that the school wasn't segregated or like in New York at that time?
It probably was, as my school was, but if you lived in that neighborhood, you went to that school.
Okay.
And so you can see on by the look on her face that she was not happy.
Did she ever talk about her school experience?
She didn't like it. She said they were very prejudiced.
Yeah, it's an interesting basis.
That's
in
an
that
amazing
picture.
Photo.
Really,
where did you get that
photo?
She had it.
Yeah, we had it. We had some of these
this
I
person's
had made over.
Expression, too.
Yeah.
Pretty similar. Yeah. Not very happy expressions.
But we were taught to go to school, and we were taught to love everybody, and we were taught every day that we left the house, my mother would say, do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. Mm-hmm. So no matter what happened, we were forbidden to fight. No matter what came up, we just had to walk away or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so from there, you learn how to have patience. Mm-hmm. This is my mother and my older sister when she was a baby.
Your mom kept some great photos.
Yeah. We kept them. I don't want to come to that one yet. This is my older sister, myself, and
my
baby sister.
Is that your mom in the window?
That's my mom in the window. That's me in the center.
That's adventure. Adorable. That was really cool.
And where was this?
This was in Brooklyn.
Okay. At home?
Yes.
That's
outside of
shot.
Where we lived in
That's
Brooklyn.
Amazing photo.
And I don't remember this. I remember kind of taking the picture, but I don't remember when I lived there because we moved up to the Bronx where we had that big house when I was in the first grade.
Who would have taken this picture? Was it a photographer? Did someone?
No, nobody. My mother took pictures constantly. She'd tell people.
And she would develop them? Did she?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
We had, back then, the only camera out was a box. And it had a little red circle on the top of it. And the film was almost reel to reel.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah, you had to put the film in there and take the picture. It just looked like a box.
That's amazing.
And it took pictures like that, but of course they were black and white. There was no
color. Did a lot of people then have cameras, or was that a pretty, like...
No. My father worked for RCA Communications, and so he got everything new that came out.
Okay.
When TV first came out, I was there when TV first came out. They had just black and white. You had a TV, a radio, a record player. And it was a big console. It was like a big piece of furniture. And the TV was real small. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And everything, you know, was black and white. And so that was that.
Cool.
My mother not knowing anything about her people because of what happened with her sister decided that she was going to make a pilgrimage to Dominica about 1 year before she passed.
Mm.
And so I went with her. And we went back to Dominica, and she went to my father's property, and they had built a daycare there. And when we went and asked the young lady, do you know any of the Forstons that used to live here? She said, oh, no. And she called somebody. The thing was that this woman was related to us, and she thought we were coming back to claim the property.
Oh.
So she didn't want to let us know. But when the other guy came up, who is this guy here, we call him Pan Man, but his name is something else. It's not Pan Man. And he came up, and he works for the government. And this is my mother's, a cousin of my mother's.
Oh. And did you know him?
No. My mother hadn't been to, had never been to Dominica in her life.
Wow.
We just went back and decided we were going to meet these people. And this is my mother's cousin, Cornelia, who is was my grandfather's niece, right here. That's me.
Yeah, you can tell.
my mother's gone now and Billy's gone. All of these people are gone except for me and Cornelia. Mm-hmm. And this is us on the ship.
That's a great shot.
Mm-hmm.
And so who are these two?
That's my brother-in-law and my sister.
Okay. Your older sister?
My baby sister, if you can believe that. She looks a lot older than me, but she's had a rough life, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my mom and a gentleman that we met that my sister thought was related to us in Aruba. We met him in Aruba. I was in Aruba. Now, that was only months before my mother's passing.
Really?
Does she look good?
She does.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now that's that side of the family. Now my father's side of the family. Oh, that's my grandmother.
That's a great shot too.
And that picture's very old. I had it made over.
Yeah.
When you have a picture made over, it comes out better than the original picture.
Incredible.
So that's my grandmother, my mother, and her brother Jimmy.
Do you know where this picture is taken?
And that was in a studio.
Oh, in a studio. Okay. Oh, yeah, you can see the curtain.
Uh-huh. This is my father when he was in the service.
Mm-hmm.
He was one of the Tuskegee Airmen. He never flew. He said he was the person that sent up weather balloons.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So he would send up the weather balloons so the flyers would know if it was safe to fly that day or whatever. They didn't have stuff like they have on TV, Doppler and all that.
Yeah.
You had to actually send a balloon up, and he had to watch till it went a certain height, and then the information box would be on the bottom of the balloon and give you the information.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. Was he trained to fly?
No.
No?
Mm-mm, he never flew.
So but he went to Tuskegee, and then where was he based after that?
Tuskegee, Alabama.
So he stayed in Tuskegee, Alabama. For how long was he there?
6 years.
6 years. Do you know when he started?
He started at the beginning of the war, and he didn't come home till I just about I was born. The war was over, and that was he and my mom, and they had the baby on base.
Did he talk a lot about that experience? Did you?
He did not hear. No.
Really? Why do you think that was?
I don't think they liked it, and my parents didn't want us to grow up hating other people.
Uh-huh.
So as we got older, they tried to tell us about the accomplishments of blacks, but they would never say
some of the struggles,
the hatreds and things. But we know that at this particular time he was in the service, that they were lynching men just
same
about
area.
Every day.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Tuskegee. That's me.
That's a cutest shot.
I want to get that one blown up.
That's you amazing. You know, we probably could blow that up at the Jackson Center.
You can.
Yeah, we can
that's
take
me.
It and scan it and blow it up. That's amazing.
And that's me and my two sisters. And that's me. I always smiled, and my other sister always
yeah,
smiled.
She's got
so you can always tell. You can always tell who's me because I always smile.
Oh my gosh! How you must have been probably 3 or 4.
No, I was older than that because I remember taking that picture.
Wow.
So I was.
This is so funny.
Maybe about 4.
Jesus, so serious. Did she grow up?
I was
serious?
About 3. That yes,
mm-hmm.
That was the one in that picture there. She's the head of the social workers in New York.
Oh wow, she's got to be serious.
She's got a prestigious job.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my father. And if you can remember, you don't know, but when back then this was a computer.
Yeah.
Computers took up the whole wall.
And so he after he worked for the after he worked in the army
he
came
went
back
to work for RCA and he became head of technicians for RCA Communication, the first and only black man to ever hold that position
until I
left New York. So I mean there might be more now, but when I left New York he was the only one that had ever held that position.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, as you know, when you were a black, mm-hmm. like my daddy, you had to have a pass to get on and off the base. Mm-hmm. Or you better have something with you. And for some reason, he put all this tape around this, and I was able to preserve it. And this was his pass, and you can see up here where it says Tuskegee, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Tuskegee Army Airfield.
Yeah.
1944.
Mm-hmm. I also have his discharge papers and all, but I couldn't get it
points
out.
Points within 30-mile radius of the station, so they couldn't go too
far. No, no.
Because they probably didn't want to in Alabama.
No. My mother was scared. My mother didn't leave the house because She was
She moved to Tuskegee as well?
She was on the base with him. She was considered what they used to call back then a mulatto, which is a biracial person that can actually pass for white. So they named them that so that they couldn't, you know, cross the lines. But there were a lot of mulatto people like my mother's complexion that married white men or married real light-skinned men, and they kept having lighter and lighter children until they phased them. There are families that have a black side and a white side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
But my mother didn't.
So she was afraid to go out?
She was afraid to go outside at all.
And probably probably also for both of them to be seen together.
Because
a lot of times I feel like in the South, at least from what I've learned in history, they can
and
blame
was,
the man for...
He could only come home like once a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. So whenever he came home, my mother had a baby. So my sister is... can I tell my age on that?
Yeah.
66. I'm 65 and my baby sister is 64. We're 11 months apart, exactly.
Wow.
1 year apart. And for 1 week a year, I'm the same age as my sister.
And then she's the same age as your other sister for 1 week?
No. It's just the two of us. Because my birthday came in the end of January and hers is the beginning of February. It just worked out that way.
And what are your sister's names?
My older sister was named after my mother, Virginia. And I was named Emily Pearl, Pearl was my father's sister, and Emma was his mother.
Ah, so you had to combine.
Yeah, and my baby sister's name is Joanne.
Okay, and do you have any idea where that one came from?
No, she was just...
They like that
named
name.
After you. We were Catholic, and you had to be named after a saint.
Oh,
so
okay.
There was a Saint Emily, and there was a Saint Virginia, and there was a Saint Joanne, I guess. Or maybe Joanne's middle name is Madeline, which is the aunt that I showed you.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. The pretty.
So y'all kept a lot of the names of the family. Yeah, my name is my grandmother's maiden name.
Yeah, we kept a lot of names.
Yeah,
in
my
the
name
family.
Is my grandmother's and my great grandmother's.
Yeah. That's the way they did back then. So anyway, my father's family, which was the aristocrats, they were very intelligent people. They all had college degrees. His sister was a 5-college professor.
Wow.
And she is featured every year in Ebony's 50th anniversary book.
Cool.
So that's her.
That's her dance?
That's her.
Wow.
And if you were alive back then, she used to be on Ed Sullivan.
Uh-huh.
All the time.
So her name was Pearl Primus?
Pearl Primus, yeah.
Oh, Primus. Oh,
well, you can say Primus. We say Primus. How'd they spell it?
But the P. See it? P-S instead of U-S.
Yeah, that was
Leaps,
a typo.
Leaps during performance
that
1949.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay, cool.
And if you go in your computer, which I know you have one.
Yeah, they spell it right there, Pearl Primus.
And you can just look her up. And get any of this information on her.
So she was a dancer.
She was a dancer. She was also an anthropologist and also a doctor.
What a combination.
She became a doctor. She got her doctorate. She became a medical doctor, and they would not let her practice.
So this is your dad's mother.
This is my dad's sister.
Sister, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then and where had she gone? Where had his family, where had people gone to colleges?
They went to college in
New
York.
York.
It said so here somewhere. Let me see.
Oh, you have a little biography on her. Awesome.
Yeah.
She
went to Hunter College in 1940. And she had planned to become a doctor. And she became involved with a dance group after she won a scholarship to the New York Dance Group.
Mm.
There she studied and taught. And she taught Maya Angelou. Dance.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So she would have been real old.
So did she tell you a lot of these stories too, or did you just find out?
Well,
I
have her history and stories and stuff. She told me about it.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't ashamed to talk about stuff like that, but my parents somehow.
So she was passed about 15
yeah, she
years
hasn't
ago.
Been dead that long.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because she was alive when my father died.
Mm. Sorry, you're saying your parents?
Well, my father. Look, they really spelled that name wrong.
They got it right over.
But they got it right up here. And then they
made, yeah. Well, somebody.
Or they still spelled it wrong. They spelled it differently up there.
Got something going on.
That just came to my attention. See, she danced with Catherine Dunham.
Mm-hmm. Paul Robeson.
Paul Robeson and Marian Anderson were out then. We know a lot about them. Mm. And she's mentioned in several books that I have.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, it looks like she taught anthropology.
Yeah, she taught anthropology. She taught about different cultures. And she traveled all over the world, and the government of the United States gave her a home on Tavern on the Green. And she had workshops that she did there.
Hmm.
And she also, there's also a Pearl Primus Museum in New York.
Really?
That you can go to. Cool. It was still up there when I went. I went to it.
That's incredible.
Had to pay to get in, too. So.
Oh, wow.
And she, it looks like she composed for Alvin Ailey, and they're coming to UNC.
Seriously?
Yeah, and she danced with Chuck Davis.
Wow.
They used to come down here every year to the Duke, to the dance festival.
Uh-huh.
And the last time she was on, I sat here on the TV watching Larry Stodden to interview her. And he said, "Do you have any relatives down here?" And she said, "No." So.
Huh. When's the last time you talked to her?
I talked to her. The last time I talked to her was when my father died.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 1986.
So when you were little, was she around?
Oh, all the while we grew up. Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah. I used to go to her dance studio, and we used to dance and different thing, and then we'd go to different places when she'd be performing, and we'd go and see her perform and all that.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. And so had your the grandparents on that side come from Trinidad and Tobago before your dad was born, or was it after?
No, they came after. They were actually born in Trinidad.
Okay.
When you look at my birth certificate said father's birthplace, and it says Trinidad, and it was the British West Indies, then Britain owned it.
Okay.
And he spoke English. He spoke perfect English, and he didn't understand why I didn't. So that I said, "Well, Daddy, while in Rome, you have to do like the Romans." So I didn't think that it was important to speak perfect English, even though a lot of people thought we were uppity because we did speak a lot better than most, you know, most people spoke. But I think I used to look like this woman a lot, and then now my older sister looks more like her, and I've taken on my mother's looks, because when I was younger, I didn't look like this.
Hmm.
But time changes everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of strange looking when I was young.
No way.
I have four children, three girls and one boy. My oldest daughter works in Knightdale. She works in a nursing home. My middle daughter is a teacher at East Chapel Hill High School. She teaches college prep English, and she taught some of your friends.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes.
Cool.
And my, who's after that? My son is a broadcaster. That's his picture right over there, and his beautiful wife, Stacy, and she's a nurse. And my youngest daughter is a supervisor for the bus company.
Wow.
For the bus people in Durham. Oh. In Durham. They do very well, and I made sure that they went to school. And they, so that I wouldn't have to take care of them the rest of my life.
Yeah, right.
That was my intention.
So they eventually could take care of
I always tell them, get something up here. Well, I don't expect them to take care of me. I want my children to take care of them and theirs.
Mm.
I have six grandchildren, five of them boys.
Wow.
And, excuse me, kind of slow getting up nowadays. These are two of my grandsons. When we went on, I took them on a cruise when they graduated high school.
I bet they were fun.
This one's working in the mall, and this one, he works at the shoe store in the mall.
Uh-huh.
And this one is a junior at North Carolina Charlotte.
Oh,
Oh, wow. Great.
What's he studying, do you know?
He's an English major right now. So he came to our church and sang. Didn't you hear him sing?
Yeah, I think so. That sounds familiar.
When we had the anniversary that time,
yep.
He sang.
So it seems like education has been a huge priority in your family for generations.
Because we know you can't get any further than this when you're not educated. Mm-hmm. And I've always told my grandchildren that it's easy to be a bum. All you have to do is do nothing. Mm. And then you can be a bum. But if you want to be somebody, you have to have something upstairs. Mm-hmm. Years ago, you could get out of high school, and if you had any kind of intelligence, you could get a good job. Now, when I got out of high school, I got a job. I worked as a secretary for RCA Communications. But knowing how important that education was, it wasn't right then, but it was getting to be because computers were coming in.
Yeah.
So I kept going back to school and going back to school, and so I did. I went, when I came here, I couldn't even get a job. Not here in Durham, but I lived in a small town named Kinston. You couldn't even get a job. Yeah. So I worked where I could, and then I just kept going to school. And so I came up here, and I was able to get a job as a teaching assistant. Well, I went back and got, you know, I was going to keep going back, and got computer experience, and then I became a teaching assistant, which meant that I was an assistant, but I could teach. I could also teach, or I could sub in a classroom and get teacher's pay. So when I decided that that I was getting older now and I was tired of really little kids, you know, it was taking a lot out of me being around little children, I decided that I wanted to do something different. So I went back to school, and then I became a media technologist, which is nothing but a librarian. So I was this media technologist, and I was that for a couple of years, and then I kept keeping my eyes on the prize, and then I finally landed the job at East Chapel Hill High School, which was the best thing I ever did in my life. Mm. East was a wonderful school. I want that on the record. They treated me very well. Mr. Thaden was our principal. He's just a wonderful man. He had to leave because he had cancer, and he got stem cell surgery, and now he's healing. And he's teaching in Durham. But he was just wonderful. And it was the nicest job I had ever been on. One of the best experiences I've ever had in my life. And I will never, ever forget those people and that job. Mm. Some jobs I've had I wish I could forget. But that one was one of the best.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to let you turn the tape off for a minute, because I'm going to tell you something real bad.
Okay.
That's all right.
Get you these pictures back.
Okay. Some of this stuff doesn't belong in here. It belongs in the other room. I take it. It's okay. Turn it.
Yeah.
I don't want people knowing about that.
Okay.
And this was a happy moment. The yearbook committee came down the stairs, and they came walking into my office, and they had these books holding them like cakes. You know, two books. And I looked, and I saw my name on the book. And I said, oh, my gosh, isn't that wonderful? They put my name on the book. Mm. And so they stood there, and I said, why are you all standing there looking at me like that? So they just kept standing there. So I knew they wanted me to do something. So they said, you're not going to open the book, Miss Banks? So I said, okay, I'll open the book. So I said, let me put on my glasses. And I opened the book, and I said, oh, this is so nice. And when I turned the page, and I said, oh, wow, you know. And then when I opened this part.
A woman with a great mind and a great
mind. I saw my face, and tears were rolling all over this.
The very first picture in the thing.
All over this book. I just could not believe that the yearbook committee would honor somebody who was, I considered a nobody, and they had my daughter stole these. Mm-hmm. But this is what I
without
looked
you
like.
Knowing.
This is what I looked like when I worked at Hope Valley School, and this is a more recent picture. You
She's
know,
always been what I aspire to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's from my daughter that teaches.
The best part of Emily Banks is that she celebrates every holiday.
Every.
She always has a pleasant smile.
Every
on her face
holiday.
And something positive to say.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you, I celebrate everything. I don't care what it is. St. Patrick's Day, okay, let's celebrate. And so I do, and I
need
just
you around
like
in our lives.
Yeah, because life is so short, and if you don't, if you're not happy during the happy times, you're going to miss it. And I missed a lot by wanting to grow up. I wanted to grow up to get out of the situation I was in. Then when I got married, I wanted to get out of that situation. So I wanted to my children to get up some signs so that I could do that so I wouldn't fail. Because when you have children, you have to put them first. You're no longer first. You put the, of course, God is always first. But you have to put your children ahead of yourself and say, what is going to be for the benefit of them? And I knew that if I was happy, they'd be happy. So that that was my move.
I mean, it amazes me the resilience. I mean, so many people who end up being hurt in different ways end up going and hurting others. And I mean, just because they internalize so much of that. And
yeah,
it amazes
well,
me that you
there's
just
something
were
wrong with them. Yeah. You know what I say? I say that's a cop-out. When people say, well, I abused this person, but I was abused when I was a child. If you've ever suffered any kind of abuse, you wouldn't want to do that to somebody else. I think there's something wrong with them mentally. You would never want to hurt another person if you felt a hurt. I can say something to you, and if I feel like what I said to you was a little short, I say, Maggie, if I hurt your feelings, I'm really sorry. It was not my intention to do that. Because I don't want to intentionally hurt anybody's feelings. And I think people need to can that stuff. But anyway, this lady is Betsy Harvey, and I had written something for her, too, not knowing they were going to put it in the yearbook. But she passed in, in the year 2009. She had cancer. And then we found out that she, if she had had a colonoscopy when she was 50, like you're supposed to do. Now, I'm telling you this. When you're 50, go to the doctor and get that colonoscopy.
My grandmother didn't go either.
She never got one. This lady was younger than me. She was only 61 when she passed. You can look at her and tell. This was the latest picture we had of her.
So this whole yearbook was dedicated to the two of you.
Yeah. And I was just
were
in
you
shock.
Retired? Retired.
I was getting. I was going to retire. This was June when they did this. This was this June, and I said this was one of the nicest things that I had that has ever happened to me on planet Earth. I have to say that because I know heaven had some things planned for me, but on Earth this was about the nicest thing that's ever happened to me. And I said, if all of the bad stuff that I went through in life, all of it was just for this moment, for this time in my life when I can retire, enjoy, see my children and grandchildren grow up and be prosperous. I'm crying. I'm sorry.
You're making me cry.
It was worth it. It was worth it. It was just worth it. And then I got Mr. Thaden to write something in my book, and I was shocked when he wrote what he wrote, too. Because he was just our principal, and he came back. He had cancer when he wrote this. He had been diagnosed, and he came back.
You want me to read it out loud, or just
you
read
can.
It? There was a time a few years ago when we were looking for a voice to define a positive, warm, welcoming, generous, kind, and outstanding face to define East Chapel Hill. Well, we were lucky beyond words. If I had the power to create the perfect presence to make East a great school, I could do no better than to have it be, to have you in that role. You never lose your temper. You never complain, even though the list of potential complaints covers several pages. And you are always ready to solve any problems that come up. You have earned the best retirement possible, so please enjoy it. There's no way that they will ever find an adequate replacement, but that's their problem. You enjoy, keep smiling, and take the rest of those trips you have on the book. Thank you for everything. Much love.
Dave Thaden.
And what was his role?
He was our principal.
The principal.
And he, the year that Betsy Harvey died, 09, he was diagnosed with cancer.
He was.
And so he had to have stem cell surgery. And he was the first one that got in on that stem cell stuff after Obama signed the papers. And he had the stem cell, and it worked.
Oh,
and so he's in remission, and he's now working at, I think, the music and art school in Durham. He teaches social studies.
Wow.
And he told me he's very happy.
Uh-huh.
Very happy, he said. And I'm so thankful. Because he didn't need the stress of being a principal anymore. He doesn't need that stress.
So how long were you at East Chapel Hill High then?
I was only there 10 and a half years.
That's
not very long to me.
It is to be in a school sometimes.
Really? To stay in the school system for 10 years.
So, and what was your work there?
I worked in the principal's office.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was his receptionist.
And so what were the different ways you interacted with students?
With students, they all came in there, especially student government.
And just visited.
And then I was also fortunate enough to be in 4 plays.
Wow.
And that was really a mystery to me. One day the play lady, who was Miss Grawowski at the time, came in and she said, "I'd like to get four or five adults to be in this play." And I said, what do they have to do?" She said, "You're going to march around and sing a song, you know, Gabriel, blow your horn or something." And the play was Anything Goes. And I said, "Well, I'd like to do that. I think I can do that." And she said, "Okay." So we had to rehearse and all of that, and I was in the play. And I tell you, that was the most fun I had, and I couldn't tell you when. So then the next year, another play lady came and asked me to be in the plays. In the meanwhile, Miss Grawowski went, and she's in charge of the arts for Chapel Hill Schools now. And she came and asked me if I would speak at the... you know, the public hearing they have that's on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I was on TV about 5 or 6 times.
Great.
But anyway, she asked me if I would speak, if I would make this speech to read. So I did, and I read the speech, and I said, told them what my name was and that where I was from. And I said that the arts are a wonderful thing. I was in 3 plays by then. I said, "I have been able to be in 3 plays. My grandson starred in a play. He was in a play, and he starred in a play." And I told them, and then when I got to the end of my speech, I said, "You only had 3 minutes to speak." They had a light blinking.
Uh-huh.
So you had to time yourself, and I had to time my speech. And at the end of my speech, I said, "When I went to school, I was graduated the only black in my class. I was not allowed to be in any plays back then."
Mm-hmm.
I said, "And this might be the only chance that somebody has to showcase their talents or be a star."
Mm-hmm.
And when I looked up, everybody was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't believe these people were crying. And I said, "I didn't say that for them to cry, but if I could touch them by what I said, then maybe they won't get rid of the arts." Because arts are important.
Mm-hmm.
The music is important. The lighting, I talked about all that. The lighting, the music, the sets. The kids make their own sets and then they tear them down after the plays.
Mm-hmm. Well, it allows people to learn way outside of that box. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
just
it was something. Mm-hmm. The last, very last play I was in at East was Rent.
Really? Oh,
cool.
And Brenton was in it. Brenton Harrison, who was our pastor's son, and they were kind of leery about him being in Rent because, you know, it was controversial.
Uh-huh.
You know, and all of that. It was different. And at the end of the play, Brenton becomes a minister. So I guess it was all right with Reverend Harrison for him to be in it. But it was really something. We had a minister's son that was in one of the plays in Anything Goes, and his grandmother was a minister, and she came to the place, and he played a drunk. But at the end of the play, everybody repented, and I said, "You must remember that he repented at the end of the play." I was also in Greece.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I was part of the alumni of 19, whatever it was, that we were the alumni of. But when I first started doing these plays, the lady that asked me to be in the plays never knew that I was the only black in my class, and she never knew that I wasn't allowed to be in plays. She just took it for granted, because nowadays things aren't like that. People take for granted that they've always been like this, but they haven't always been like this. I wasn't told you can't be in a play, but you just knew.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like you knew you couldn't go in the store and try on shoes. And you knew that you couldn't do this, and you knew you couldn't do that. And then to when New York was just getting better, then when I told my mother I was moving down south, you know she was unhappy. But she loved it here.
And you brought all four kids south too with you, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
That was the idea.
Yeah, I thought so. I just how old were they at that point?
We were fleeing abuse. When I came south in the beginning, my son was less than a year. He was still in diapers.
Wow.
Yeah. And my daughter was about two, and my other daughter was about four. And she started school. She went to school that year. And I didn't have the other daughter yet.
What did you do when you, like, so you just, how did you get here to North Carolina? How did you choose
came
North
on a
Carolina?
Bus.
How did you choose North Carolina?
I knew somebody, some older people that were living here.
And would let you,
and
did
they,
you stay with them at first?
No. I rented a house, somebody's house. And this gentleman was a single man, and he allowed us to rent, he was an older man, and he allowed us to rent his house. And he only charged me $50 a month. To rent his house. Now, this was way back in 1970. And back then, you could buy $25 worth of groceries would fill up a cart.
And you said it was hard to get a job at first, but where were
you?
It
was hard to get a job there. I worked at a funeral home.
Okay.
And I also worked in restaurants.
And you're still going. You started going to school at that point too.
I started going to school when I joined the. Of course, I was Catholic back then, so I went to the Catholic school, and they decided they wanted me to teach religious education, and I said I don't feel that I'm qualified to do that. And they said, your faith qualifies you. And I said, I have a lot of faith, because, I mean, who would move four children to an unknown destination? But I said that that I don't believe I can do that. So they said, okay, we'll send you to school. And they sent me up here.
Oh, wow.
Up here to Chapel Hill?
To Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And so I took courses, and I just took religious education. That's all. They didn't send me to go to, you know, to finish my whole college, whatever. And so I had to do that to teach. And Bishop Gosman, if you've ever heard of him, he was the bishop of the diocese in North Carolina. He commissioned me to teach religious education, and he anointed me and all that other stuff. So.
And all this while, you're raising four children.
I'm raising four children. And sometimes there would be times I had three jobs. I work at, now my children were good about sleeping all night, and but Kinston was a place where you didn't even have to lock your doors back then. And so, oh yeah, everything's different.
So you
now.
Didn't have to worry about their safety as much as...
No, and I had good neighbors.
Okay. Yeah.
So I...
was that a mostly African-American community
yes,
that you lived in?
Yes. And so we had a teacher living across the street and a guy living next door who used to teach, but he went blind. He was blind. We called him Uncle Frank. And he was a blind man, and he lived next door. And so they were, you know, they were around good people, I think. You could walk anywhere in town. You could walk from one end of town to the other end. We walked everywhere. If I tell you how many miles I walked to get to work sometime, you would be in shock. It was like from here to the church.
Wow.
And back.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Resilience, I tell you.
So I would walk, and then my children would walk, and we'd go to church on Sunday, and I taught religious education on Sunday afternoon, and then it was back to work. So, and sometimes I'd work at night. I got a job where I'd work at night, and so I'd get off 6 o'clock in the morning, go home, fix breakfast for my children and get them ready for school, send them to school, take a bath, get dressed, and go back to work somewhere else. I had like 2 or 3 jobs. Mm. And there were times when I would wake up and I'd say, what job am I supposed to be on?
Right.
Because it was constantly. Yeah. Then when I moved up here and I went to Hope Valley. You remember Hope Valley
mm-hmm.
School?
Yep.
The original Hope Valley School.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Hope Valley School to put my daughter, who was my youngest daughter then, in. She was in the fifth.
So you were in Kinston for several years.
Yeah. 14.
Okay.
She was in elementary, the last year elementary school, 5th or 6th grade. Mm-hmm. And so that was the last year that Hope Valley had a 6th grade. After that, all the elementaries went to 5th grade. Then you went to middle school, then high school. But she was in the 6th grade class. So anyway, I went to put her in school, and the assistant principal said, where are you? No, the secretary said, where are you employed? And I said, I'm not employed, that I was fleeing abuse, and I'm in North Carolina, and I want to register my children for school, and when I do get a job, I'll tell you where I'm employed, you know. I just knew I just wasn't worried about it. Really, you'd think I would be, but I wasn't. I had a friend up here then, a girlfriend that lived up here. She told me to come up here.
Mm-hmm.
So when she was going to give me a job in her daycare. But after I filled out the papers, the lady whose name is Linda Fisher went into the office and told the assistant principal, Joanne Edelman, we have a lady out here. She seems to be very intelligent. And we could use her here. We need to get her here. So before I could get out the door, this woman came running out and said, how would you like to have a job? This doesn't happen. This just doesn't happen. Okay?
Anybody deserved it, though.
The nuns were praying for... Oh, I didn't tell you about the nuns. When I came up here, because I was a member of the Catholic Church, the nuns decided that they would get my checks from my job and mail them up here to me.
Mm.
And so they would get my checks and mail them up here to me. And when I got up here, I had to call them and tell them they were praying for me all the while. And when I got up here, it was like 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. They said, we can stop praying now. And so they stopped praying. So they were praying for us all the time, and they loved us. They really did, and I loved them back.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were... when we came up here, and we were staying with my girlfriend, who was the only person I knew up here, and there was nowhere to sleep, so we politely slept on the floor or on the couch or wherever there was room, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so people didn't know that. And when I went to the school, I was neatly dressed and all that, and people would have never guessed that I slept on the floor the night before.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
But at any rate, I went to Hope Valley to get my daughter registered, and this lady comes running out and said, we need you here. How would you like to have a job here? Well, I was flabbergasted. So I said, well, in a way, you know, I said, should I believe this woman? So I said, well, miss, I said, I will come back. I have to get my other children registered for class, and I'll come back and talk to you. So I went to Giffins and got my son in Giffins,
yep, Giffins.
And my two daughters, my two eldest daughters were in Jordan.
Uh-huh, hello, Jordan.
To tell you how things changed, they wouldn't let my daughter, who teaches now, twirl. She was a flag person in Kinston. Wow. They wouldn't let her twirl because she had braids.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, because she had braids?
How did they?
She had her hair braided.
How did they get away with that?
They got away with it. But there's a good side to good story about that too.
Oh, yeah.
So anyway, we got them registered in school, and I came back, and she said, we really would like you to... Now, I hadn't filled out an application. This woman knew nothing about me other than talking to me. So I said, well, when would you like me to start? This was about a Thursday. I figured she'd say Monday or next week. She said, now. And I hadn't eaten. You know, I'm thinking, I have no money. I don't have lunch money. Whatever. So I said, okay, I'm willing to start it. So what I was doing was working with a math teacher. And mm-hmm. she had stacks upon stacks of papers that hadn't been graded. She had a whole desk full of papers that hadn't been graded. And so that's what...
Started by just sorting through those papers.
No, I didn't sort through them. I had to grade them. They were math papers, which was my forte because okay, I was good at math. So I started grading these papers and doing, and I worked with her that year. The second year, I worked with another lady that had no qualms about telling you she didn't like you. Mm. And she'd say things like, I remember when the blacks would have to go to this building and the whites would be at that building. And I said, well, that's nice, but this is these are the 1980s now. Things have changed, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't want to be cruel with her, but I wanted to ask so bad, could they take me out of this woman's class? No kidding. But the principal came in one day and she said, I put you in this class for a reason. Mm. And so I said, okay. So I accepted it. And I bit the bullet, and I stayed with this woman about 3 years. But at any rate...
And there's some stuff.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. And I just couldn't believe that after all this time, people were still talking like that, you know. But she'd do things like read Little Black Sambo, which is outlawed.
Wow.
Which was outlawed back in the 60s. They outlawed that book. I don't know how she could do it.
In the 80s.
But anyway,
I don't know about that book. Is it a...
It's
a really racist book, but
it's about a little black boy, and they call him Little Black Sambo, and she'd read it in old black vernacular, like
oh
she'd
my
say,
God.
And Little Black Sambo said, and I'd say, oh my goodness, and so you know about Brer Rabbit, the one and the holding on to the
right. She'd read that too.
She'd read all that stuff. Mm. She wouldn't read it to me. She read it to the class, and the little black kids would say she was prejudiced, but I'd say, well, that's a kind of strong word to use. You know, let's not judge her and, you know, let's...
But they already perceived that at
that
age?
They already knew it. You think you can hide something from a child?
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So at any rate, we had second graders then, first and second grade. No, we had first graders. So she got ready to retire, and I wanted to be with a teacher named Miss Nichols that I knew was a Christian. I knew she was a Christian woman. I knew I wasn't going to bump into all that kind of stuff.
What was her first name?
Jean Nichols. Oh. Do you know her?
No, I know Babs Nichols.
Jean Nichols' husband was a principal in one of the inner city schools. And she was a very nice lady. Mm-hmm. And so I went to work in her class. And I enjoyed very much. I worked with her for 8 years.
Okay.
And her children... And my children grew up together.
Cool.
I was invited to her children's weddings. her son put that unit out there, that big heating unit air conditioning unit out there for me. Uh-huh. He became a heating and air conditioning person, and I told his mother that if I ever needed any air conditioning, which I always lived in apartments, so I was wondering how I was going to need an air conditioning, that he would be the one I'd call. Well, when my unit went out, he was the first one I called, and he came and did it.
That's good.
So you want to hear about my daughter? That So anyway, this particular daughter said she was not gonna. She was gonna not gonna be like me because I would have took the braids out if it was something I really wanted to do. She refused to take the braids out. She had a little beady beads going on, and so she didn't twirl that year. Well, when she went to college, she went to North Carolina Central. She tried out for the flag team. And we're all short people. We're all 4 foot something. She's shorter than I am. So they asked her if they would like her to give her a shorter flag so she could try out for the twirl. And she said, I will use the same flag everybody else is using. Mm. And she got up there and twirled that flag and... That was it? Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
Kids learn that they can do anything just like you.
She won a competition doing a portrait of Rosa Parks.
Oh, wow.
She went all the way to the state competition, and she was in the nationals.
Mm.
And you know it's hard to beat the nationals because there's always somebody better than you. But the guy said when she opened her mouth to speak, he could not believe that this voice was coming out this little person. Uh-huh. She's something.
She's really artistically gifted.
Oh yeah, she has. She has a very loud voice, speaking voice, and she just was born with that. And she used to get her in trouble in school because they used to say she talks. And I said, don't talk in these classes because the teachers don't like it. But she has edited movies and films and done things like that. She's That's really wonderful. Something.
One of the things that you mention a lot along the way, and that I know is such a theme in your life, is the foundation of your faith, and that all along the way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you could start in time, like a little, like kind of early on. Even you showed us that picture, and just talk a little bit about where you think some of that came from, and what values were ingrained through it, and just where it's been important throughout your life.
Okay, mm-hmm. I will. My grandmother, who spoke very little English, would take us to church mostly every Sunday,
mm-hmm.
and she. Took us. She died when I was only 11 years old, so I was very young when I lost my grandmother. But we could walk to church. Church was just a walk away from our home, and we'd walk to church and we made our communion and confirmation and all of that. And we go to church every week, and we.
And would that have also been a mostly white church?
It was Catholic.
Mm-hmm.
When we made our first communion, we were the only two blacks that made our communion.
Mm-hmm.
So and then when we went to school, of course, we were the only blacks in the school. And then as the school started rezoning, you know, just like they're building and doing here, the school rezoned, and so they took in what we call Washington Avenue, the avenue behind our house, and we had other black kids in the schools, but I don't know how it happened, because in junior high, I had black kids in my class,
mm-hmm.
but when I graduated from high school, I had no blacks in my class, but it was not a difficult thing for me, because by then, young people were different. Their parents would be prejudiced, but once they left that house, they weren't listening to that.
Yeah.
They said, you bleed just like we do. You know, we're my mother's prejudiced now. You can't come in my house, but we're going to be friends. Mm. And so we became friends. And
by high school, they'd started to form really their own.
Yeah. And we just became friends.
Mm.
And so when I went to my class reunion
mm-hmm.
in the year 2003, and I walked in, the only black woman there,
mm-hmm.
They said, we got along, didn't we? You know, they had some doubt there. And I thought we did. But, of course, you knew you weren't welcome here and you weren't welcome there. But that didn't bother me because I had a house.
Right.
And I had sisters and we were real close. I had one brother. We weren't that close. But my sisters and I were real close.
Mm.
And we always had us,
yeah.
you know. And so, yeah, we did a lot of praying, and I believed in prayer in the morning, prayer in the evening. Mm-hmm. We prayed before we ate. The whole family.
Mm-hmm.
We prayed before we ate.
And you said your grandmother was the one who started taking you to
church. My grandmother was the one that really took us. My mother was had my brother when a lot... You know, he was a lot younger than we were.
Mm-hmm.
So I take it that she was sickly some years.
Mm-hmm.
And so she'd be cooking and doing, and she really didn't go that much in the beginning, but she'd go, like, you know, sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And then, but she insisted on us praying.
Right.
And she'd get us dressed up every Sunday, and we'd go to church. And as we got older and started dating and going mm-hmm. out, if we didn't go to church on Sunday, we couldn't go out. You could not go on a date.
My parents
could
not.
Mm-hmm. My parents said that. They would
Every night we'd say prayers in the ways that we always said the prayers in the same way. We'd open it with, "Now lay me down to sleep," and then everybody mm-hmm. would have to go one after another. We'd have to say out loud different prayers. So we'd pray for all the people that we knew and for all the folks who were homeless, and we'd go through
and
a long list.
And I still do that. Our church is Methodist and they don't believe in praying rosary, you know, mm-hmm. praying the rosary. I still pray the rosary.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think there's a prayer that you can say is a bad prayer. So I don't believe that. So mm-hmm. that's just me. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I've always been mindful about praying, about not hating.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been so easy to hate.
Mm.
When I left my husband, I felt like I hated him.
Mm-hmm.
He was abusive to me. He didn't take care of his children. He was doing drugs, messing around with other women. I came across every kind of abuse you could name.
Mm.
Mm.
Got beat up. Stuff that, you know, that normally happens when you start being abused. Well, it starts off little things, and then it winds up being a big thing. And once they can get you, push you away from your family, you know.
Make you feel isolated.
They isolate you, and then you're mm-hmm. you're in their clutches, and then what can you do?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you just have to kind of bide your time and say, you know, when can I wait? So I just kept praying and praying. And God will give you an answer if you just pray. And when my girlfriend, who moved up here, said, Emily, there's opportunities. She lived in Durham. There's opportunities up here. You can come up here and get a job. If you can't get one, I will give you a job in my daycare. She had a daycare. And she said, I will give you a job. So I prayed about it and prayed about it. And so when I decided that I was coming, like I said, I prayed and I told the nuns and I told my best friend, who is now deceased, that I was leaving.
What was her name?
Her name was Milton Pollock. Her husband is a lawyer in Kinston.
Okay.
And I told her, and my youngest daughter, I don't think really wanted to go.
This is when you left New York or Kinston?
When I left Kinston.
Okay.
And my son was kind of famous there.
So was this a second husband or the same one?
This was the second one.
Uh-huh.
So I decided that I didn't want to.
So you experienced that twice?
Twice. Mm-hmm. My first husband was physically abusive along with it. My mm-hmm. second husband really wasn't physically abusive, but he was scary.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, I would say, now that I look back on it, he was either schizophrenic or bipolar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had something
here. His doctor knew it, and his doctor, I asked his doctor, couldn't he have him committed? And he said it would be a conflict of interest because he was his cousin.
Mm-hmm.
So he couldn't do it. So I told him, I said, well, I'm not going to be here. And he said, you do what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I left there, and I never looked back. I had a 2-story, 14-room home.
Mm-hmm.
I left every bit of it. And see,
God
tells you he's going to bless you, he's going to bless you, and he'll give you bigger and better every time. My daughter, who teaches, has a 2-story huge home,
mm-hmm.
and I lived with her for 9 years before I moved in here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and my older daughter has a house, and this daughter here has an apartment, and my son and his wife have a house. So mm-hmm. we've all prospered, and I haven't lost anything.
Mm.
I was able to. I got a good job that I could retire.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
Before I was 65, because I was only 64 last year when I retired,
mm-hmm.
and people were saying you can't retire, and I said why not? And they said, well, you just can't retire. And people telling me you can't live here. When I got ready to move in here, you can't live here.
Mm.
And I said, why can't I? And they said, no, these places, most of the time, two people move in because there's a bathroom and bedroom in there, and there's a bathroom and bedroom in there. And usually, you know, two people would share the rent, as they call it. Well, I'm not renting. I bought this.
Mm.
And God has provided for me, you know, along the way. And when my mother came here, she was so happy, you know, that I had moved in it was a beautiful area before all this crap started going up.
Yeah,
here.
Right.
Was it, did you have something you wanted to, go ahead?
So, I'll show you some more pictures.
Yeah.
I could show you a picture of one of my classmates that moved back to, he was Puerto Rican,
mm-hmm.
and he moved back to Puerto Rico because of the prejudice. They were discriminated against too. And back then, there were no Mexicans. It was either from Cuba or Puerto Rico in New York.
Yeah.
And so he was from Puerto Rico, and he was they wouldn't let, you know, in school they didn't want you to speak Spanish and all that. And I lost all my Spanish. I used to be able to speak Spanish when I was a little girl. And so he moved back there, and he kept telling me, come to Puerto Rico. There's no prejudice there. And I said, have you been back to America? There's no prejudice here, you know.
Yeah.
But we went back to New York in 2003, went to my reunion. And in 2006 or 7, he died. But I did get to go to Puerto Rico and enjoy with him.
Really quickly, can you just tell, I'm interested a little bit in like some of your childhood memories about like New York and in relation to your grandparents, especially, and some of your memories with them.
Okay.
So you've talked about what they do, but I also want to hear about some of your memories of with them.
We had two kitchens, if you can believe that. We had a kitchen downstairs, which was Mommy's kitchen.
In which area of New York was
the Bronx?
The Bronx, okay.
And a kitchen upstairs, which was my grandmother and auntie's kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
So between the two kitchens, I learned how to cook.
Yeah, no kidding.
And so I would go, I would be under my grandmother a lot because I enjoyed being with her.
Mm-hmm.
She had a rocking chair, and I used to sit in her rocking chair and just rock. And she would tell me different things about how she worked. And she'd bring us home cookies because she worked for Nabisco. And she,
so y'all had lots of technology and lots of cookies in the
and
house.
And lots of singing.
Oh, yeah?
They sang constantly.
What kind of songs?
Just
everything?
Yeah, just anything. They sang. They just sang a lot. And my mother sang a lot. My aunt sang a lot. They sang all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they didn't know the words, and they'd just be singing and humming and doing. And my uncle, he would sing a lot, too. And my other uncle was real quiet. He didn't say very much at all. And but we all grew up in one house.
Wow.
My mother and father, two sisters and a brother, one auntie and two uncles. Mm-hmm. And we all lived in one house.
Wow.
That's right. And so if you can get along with that many people in a house, you can get along with anybody. What I look at.
Yeah.
So I did. It was so easy to get along with people, you know.
This came out of that
so
book.
My aunt that danced, the one that was a dancer, she that's what somebody wrote. This is one of my cruises here. She was always dancing somewhere. So we didn't get to see her a lot. But we could go to, we could see her on TV.
That's fine for a little
Did you start writing poetry as a kid, or is that something more recent?
I used to draw a lot. When I was a kid, mm-hmm. I drew all the time. And I kind of stayed to myself. I kind of got withdrawn after I went through a lot with that teacher. I'd stay in my room and just draw, mm-hmm. listen to the radio. We didn't have TVs in your room. You didn't have TVs in your room.
Yeah.
But we had one TV in the house. And this is my friend Charles in Puerto Rico. But it was nice. Well, I'll show you another one. You could look at the other book.
What was it? Did you play outside a lot in the Bronx?
We went outside a lot. We had a big yard, and we had a pantry, and my mother grew vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so we had a garden out there.
Have you been back to that area of New York since?
No. My daughter and I plan on going back.
Yeah. I bet it'd be really fascinating to see how it's
Miss Banks, who were some of your greatest mentors in your life? Who would you say were some of the people in your life who really have guided you?
Well, I'd say my mom,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, I had her for 61 years. So that was a wonderful thing to be to be 61 years old and still have your mother.
That's amazing.
And so she didn't like to talk about the past a lot, which, you know, bothered me a little bit. But my father was real intelligent, and he would tell you about history. he would tell us about Matthew Henson and different people like that who went to the North Pole. And he was still living in my time. Garrett A. Morgan, who made the electric light. Now, back then, they didn't have history books about black people. Mm-hmm. So the only person you heard about was George Washington Carver.
Right.
And Martin Luther King wasn't even around then. Mm-hmm. So you
did a limited.
Yeah. But I actually met Malcolm X.
Really?
And he was actually a friend of my mother's.
Ooh.
And she was one of the people that persuaded him to go back to Mecca because he was so full of hate for white people. And she said, if you go to Mecca, you're going to see people with white skin, brown skin, black skin, and they all get along and they all live together. And he just couldn't conceive that. And then when he went back to Mecca and he found out about Muhammad, what Muhammad mm-hmm. was doing and all, he changed his ideological, you know, his thinking. And when he changed his thinking, of course, they killed him. And so my mother really felt bad about that. She used to always say, maybe if I had never told Malcolm, you know. And she said it one day, and I realized she was hurt about it. And I said, Mommy, what happened was meant to happen.
Mm.
And that if you had never told him to go back there, he would have never known what love was.
Mm. Mm-hmm. How did she know Malcolm X? And what was the experience for you of meeting him?
I saw him a lot. He hung out in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother met Malcolm was, she was babysitting for a little boy who was a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd see Malcolm on TV and stuff, and my mother would say, I'd like to meet him. My mother was very outgoing. Mm-hmm. And so the lady said, well, you can come to the temple, you know, and meet him, and that's how she met him.
Wow.
So mm-hmm. she went down to the Muslim temple?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
And so how did she know all about Mecca? Had she just heard about it?
Oh, she and my father, you know, they were historians. I guess they read a lot about, because they used to tell us about these people. And I would say, well, how come I never read about these people in books? You know, how come they never teach us that in school? And my father would say, you wait and see. Now, when my father was in Tuskegee and they used to send up atom bombs and things, they never wore masks, they never wore goggles, they never did anything. Mm-hmm. And of course, now they know that, you know, that all that fallout and stuff made these people sick.
Mm-hmm.
And they also, he used to tell us how they experimented on the soldiers, and we didn't know anything about it until they showed Miss Everett's boys,
mm-hmm.
where they told you how they used to give them syphilis. And give. Did you know about that?
Yeah.
I think I've
you
heard
know
about
it. And they would let half of them get penicillin, and the other half not
Which
get penicillin.
Which is why they formed the
ethics.
Yeah, all the ethics.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Where was it?
That was in Alabama, where my father was.
I thought so. Yeah, this is the Tuskegee.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so my father told us about that way back. I was a little girl when he was telling me about this stuff. He said the government will experiment on you. When polio shots first came in, I was in the fourth grade. He forbid us to take a polio shot.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't get a polio shot until I was pregnant with my first child.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, so, like, do you have pretty clear memories of the Civil Rights Movement? Was that something?
Yes.
Were you involved in any aspect of that?
No.
No,
we were forbidden.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. By your mom?
Well, My mother and father were real strict, and if they said no, no meant no.
Mm-hmm.
When Martin Luther King made his I Have a Dream speech, I was working at the time for RCA Communications. I was a secretary, but I was only 17 years old, and my mother said, you can't go, and that was the end of it, because they didn't want you in that crowd. Mm-hmm. When they had the riots in Harlem and they, you know, were burning in the... If you ever watched Malcolm X and you see where the guy got thrown in jail and all the Muslims went down there and they stood in front of all the stores. Well, if you look clearly, you'll see where it says Woolworth.
Mm-hmm.
My sister was working in the Woolworth in the basement with the fish... and little sea animals. And she called my father and said, they won't let us out of the store. And my father said, what are you talking about? She said, they have completely blocked all the traffic and everything, and they won't let us out of the store. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of my father's brave person. My mother used to say I had more, what'd she say? You have more nerve than a brass monkey. Because I was never afraid of anything. So Daddy said, come on, Emily, let's go. And so I got in the car with him, and we went down there. And then he parked across the street, and I walked right through the marches, right through them, and went downstairs, and I said, come on, Joanne, let's go. And I said, any of the rest of you all want to get out of here? Follow me. Mm. And we just walked right out.
Wow.
You would not believe that they wouldn't stop you or do something, because they were policemen lined up. Then you had all the Muslim men that were lined up there.
So what were they blocking it for? What was the...
They were boycotting because this man got beat up by the police.
Okay.
And they had him in jail, and they wouldn't let anybody see him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And Malcolm said that they would kill him if they let him stay in there. He was beat up pretty bad. And he wanted him to be able to see a doctor and all. And so they, all of the Muslim men and the men that weren't Muslims, I guess they were just marching. They just marched down there, and they were in front of the police department there. And there was the police department and the Woolworth and all that was right there.
Mm.
And my sister worked in the Woolworth. I never worked in Harlem, but she did. She said, they're not going to let us out. I said, well, they let me go through. I just walked right through them. Come on, let's go.
Where does your courage? We've talked a lot about fear and courage. You have courage at every stage of your life.
For some reason, I just believed that because God said if you pray, he will send angels to be around you. And I always believed that I had an angel watching over me, and nothing was ever going to happen.
Mm.
And I, of course, now I'm a little scary. You know, I might not have done it now. But when you're young like that, was Joanne out of school? Joanne might have been 16, maybe. I was 17 or 18. And I just didn't believe that anything was going to happen. And my father, who was a king to me, would just say, he was real staunch. He wore a white shirt and a tie every day. Mm. And he would just say, let's go. And that was it. Mm. And we just went on. I was never afraid.
That's amazing.
I'm a little bit scary now. But people try to scare me now, like, somebody in the church said, because Mr. Revels likes to lock the women in the car when he goes and gets gas at night. And she said, you let him lock you in the car? And I said, yes, he locks me in the car when he gets gas. And they thought that was terrible.
Hmm.
But he's very, he's very skeptical about, leaving us or anything. But mm-hmm. I've just never been where I couldn't walk through Harlem or... After living in an all-white neighborhood for all my life, I didn't think, that was too bad. These were supposed to be my folk.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't afraid, but I guess there was more to be afraid of in Harlem than there was in there. There was a lot of prejudice with black people, too. Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of black people didn't like us because of the way we spoke, because our family had money.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of internalized
violence, because we had a nice house.
Mm-hmm.
We took piano lessons, dance lessons.
Mm-hmm.
We were just the privileged few, so they didn't care for that. And they'd call me all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't even remember. They'd call me half-breed.
Yeah.
A half-and-half, zebra, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I never considered myself anything other than black, but they... They say, well, your grandmother's white, so you're not black. And I said, my grandmother's not white. Mm. And I never realized that she was any different than us till people started saying it, mm-hmm. pointing it out.
When do you feel like you had your first, like, conscientiousness of the way that race was treated in America? Like
When I went to that school and that teacher hated
so
me.
Before that, you really
didn't before that I didn't. We lived in a neighborhood that was not the best neighborhood in the world. It was near the Yankee Stadium.
Okay.
But there were a lot of black people around, and I was never mistreated by a teacher. I didn't know what that was to be mistreated. We went to Catholic school after school, and we, you know, got tutored with religious education, which they call CCD after a while, but it was religious education back then. You had to go to that. Right. And so we went to that two or three times a week in the afternoons.
Mm. Well, it's because, like, my sister, and I think you have a similar story, my sister didn't. So we grew up in a pretty diverse neighborhood, and my sister went to an elementary school. It was almost all African-American. Mm-hmm. And so the first day in class, she was called white, and she came home crying, saying, "I don't understand. I'm not white. I'm peach." And she was so confused by why people were calling her white. And she just didn't have that consciousness of why, you know, because we'd never... You know,
I never knew what that was.
Well, and never that it had any meaning beyond.
No, it didn't. And when the little girl said, "Your grandmother's white, and you can't be black." She didn't call me black. She called me a Negro, I think. Mm. But she said, "Your grandmother's white. So what are you?" And I said, "My grandmother's not white." Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't get them past this color thing.
Yeah.
You know, just because she was real light didn't make her white. Mm-hmm. And we thought she was just like us until the girl said something. Then I kind of looked at her and I said, you know, she's not. She don't look like me. But I thought we were all the same, you know.
Well, we are.
I never paid it any attention until it's brought to your attention.
Exactly.
Prejudice is something that is taught. You're not born with it. Mm-hmm. If you bring up children in a house and you don't ever mention color, they won't know what they are until they get to school and somebody says, "Well, you're white and you're black."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They would never know. And I never called myself a Negro.
Mm-hmm.
I always called myself black before it became fashionable. Because when I was in junior high school, I was black then. And we were still Negroes then.
Mm-hmm.
We were colored up until junior high school. Then we were Negroes.
Mm.
And I said, no, white people called us Negroes. I'm not calling myself that. I'm a member of the black race. If you look up the races, there is no Negro race.
Mm.
It's black, white, brown, yellow, white. There is no Negro race. So I wouldn't call myself that. I called myself black. And a lot of black people didn't like that either, including my father,
because
he said he was a Negro.
Really? Mm.
And so I knew where the word Negro came from. I looked it up, and it came from the Negro tribe. And when they came to this country, people couldn't pronounce it, so they called them Negras, and then they started calling them niggers, and that's how the word nigger came. That was a slang that Southern people would use for black people.
Mm-hmm.
It was a slang word that came from the Negro tribe. So then now you know where it comes from.
When you were growing up, did you hear a lot of interesting things about the South? What was the...
My mother would always say, "I would never go back there." Mm-hmm. They're very prejudiced in Florida, mm-hmm. in different places. And so we always feared, we always thought that if we moved down South, that it would be outhouses. We had this perception, you know.
Right.
Of that there was outhouses and this, that, and the other. And like I said, when I told my mother I was moving down South, she said, "Oh,
almost afraid for you." Eh?
She just was not.
When did she first come and visit? Was that a shocker to her when she first came down South to visit you?
No,
not shocking.
When she came,
I
was in Kinston, and then she came when she came up here. She was fine. When she first went to Kinston, she said, "Would I be able to bring my white friend here?" And I said, "Sure." I don't think, you know, would anybody say anything, because I lived in getting Kinston. I lived in a black area,
mm-hmm.
and so even though I lived in a house, so she said, "Well, would you?" do you think anything would happen to her? I said, no. You know, I said, but you, when we get ready to go, if we went in Eckers Drugstore, you'd have to go in one entrance and I'd have to go in another. Now, I soon found out the entrances like that and the stores like that, and I wouldn't go to them. Mm-hmm. I don't care what I needed. I wasn't going to that store. Mm-hmm. I have to walk 3 or 4 blocks more. I just walk 3 or 4 blocks more. Mm-hmm. And some of the stores, you know, they were, the people didn't like you. They didn't want you to try on clothes or anything. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go in those stores. Mm. And now, of course, that's all changed now.
Yeah.
But it was when I was, and I was surprised because, like I said, that was in the
70s. Right. I'm thinking.
And things had changed so much in New York. And when I came down here, it was like being in a time zone.
Yeah. The South has a time zone.
I had to advocate for my children all the time, you know. Mm. But anyway, the good thing about it is that the Lord blessed me enough to go to Europe.
Oh, wow. Was this on a cruise?
No. I flew there with 69 white people. I was the only black.
When was this?
This was in 2001, right before 9/11.
Oh, wow.
And I went to Europe, and there I am.
Where'd y'all go in Europe?
We went to London, Wales, and Ireland.
Oh, cool.
And the people in Wales and Ireland were so sweet and so kind, and the people in Ireland just ate me up. They told me I was Diana Ross. They wanted to touch my face, and they were just so sweet. And I said, oh, gosh, I could just, can't you all just leave me here? I mean, I loved it. I really did.
That's great.
I loved it. Funny. I said, you know, if the people in the United States acted this nice, it would be nice.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But this is the year after I came to East. I went to East in 2000, and I saw it on the internet thing on my computer, trip going to Europe. And I said, oh, gosh. It was an educational tour, but it wasn't through the school. Somebody, Winslow Carter, who was a counselor at our school, his wife was doing the trip.
Okay.
And I didn't know him, and I didn't know her. But anyway, I put myself on the computer, and I said, can I go on this trip? And they said, oh, sure. So I found out who Winslow Carter was, and I went to his office, and I said, Mr. Carter, I would love to go on this trip. And he said, my wife would love to have you. And so I said, well, I'm going. So anyway, I wound up going. And it was people from Florida and different places. We all joined together and went on this trip. And I didn't know any of the people until about a week before I went on the trip, I met the people from here. Mm-hmm. But the people from Florida, I didn't get to meet till we got there.
Okay.
And they were nice, too. They were young people.
Uh-huh.
College and high school kids.
Now, did you go to St. Joseph's by this time? When did you start going to St. Joseph's?
About 2000. I moved here. I've been here 7 years. So that's what?
You've been at St. Joseph's?
I've been 8 years here.
At this place?
Mm-hmm.
2002?
So 2003. In 2003, I was a member of Orange Grove Missionary Baptist Church. And what I did was, I used to go there. My daughter used to pick me up, and I'd have to spend the night with her. And then we'd go to church, and then she'd bring me back home, because they have an 8 o'clock in the morning service. Uh-huh. And then, did you know Leroy? Did you know Willis's brother when he was living? You didn't get to meet him. Well, one of Willis's oldest brothers was my boyfriend at one time. He died in the year 2000, and he died in the year 1992. So he's been dead almost 20 years. Mm-hmm. Well, his family, who was Willis and his sisters and all of them, that's their church. And the mother, whose name was Sis. And so every time somebody died, I'd wind up going to that church to the funeral. Mm-hmm. So the last time, when the mother died, I said I was living here. I had just moved in here when the mother died. And I said, Leroy, who was Willis's oldest brother, I said, I come over here so much for sad things. I'd like to come over here for happy things sometimes. So he said, Emma, he called me Emma. Emma, I drive the bus, the church van. He was driving the church van then. He said, and I'd be more than happy to pick you up. So every other Sunday, he would pick me up, and every other Sunday, I'd go to my church.
Yeah.
So
this
then
is Willis?
This is Willis's brother.
Okay, his brother.
Oldest brother. He's dead now.
Right.
Willis has lost 10 family members.
Oh, wow.
He has really had it tough.
Mm.
I'm going to tell you. If he didn't know the Lord, I don't know what would be of him.
Yes.
But anyway, he'd come and pick me up, and I'd go to church. And then I decided, you know, it's doing a lot to my daughter to have to come all the way over here and get me. And it's about an hour drive to her house. And then she would take me to church 8 o'clock in the morning and bring me back over here, you know. And I said, when there's a church right there and somebody would pick me up to go to the church. So I had to pray about that too and ask God what to do, because I didn't want to leave that church. I loved that church.
Mm.
Even though it was a huge church, had thousands of members, it's a big church.
Okay.
If we ever get to go over there, they have big screen TVs. They don't hand out any paper.
Oh,
when you go
the
to the church, they have the big screen TVs.
The songs and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it's really, really a nice church. And so I decided that this church was so small compared to that church.
Uh-huh. And, but everybody knows everybody.
They think they know everybody.
Mm.
And so I decided that that I was going to join the church. So what I did was write a letter to my pastor and told him that that I'm not leaving the church because of anything or anybody, but that I had moved to Chapel Hill and it was too much on my daughter to come get me every other Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And that I wanted to be a member somewhere, not just every other Sunday member. And I was moving my membership to St. Joseph. And then I wrote a letter to Reverend Harrison.
Who was the pastor?
Who was the pastor then. And so Willis's brother and two sisters were in the church then.
Mm.
The mother had just died. And then one sister died. The youngest sister died. And then Phyllis died. Did you know when Phyllis died?
Mm-hmm. I remember him talking about it. I remember him preaching about it, or giving a testimony mm-hmm. about it right afterwards. So I think I was there when they were there. I just don't. I never met them, or at least registered them as his siblings.
Well, I don't know if you were here when his sister was here, but she only died a few years ago, and she used to sing with the Gospel Travelers. But at any rate, this family was such a huge family,
mm-hmm.
a huge family, and they kind of adopted me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I always felt like I had people there. And then they started dying out.
Mm.
And I just when his older sister died, Josephine, I called her Peg. When Peg died, I was just mm-hmm. in disbelief.
Mm.
She died kind of, you know, it's like all of a sudden, yeah.
So you've always been really close to that family.
Yeah, that family. I knew them now. Willis is 50-something now. Myself and my then boyfriend, who was Willis's older brother, drove his wife in a limousine to the wedding in her wedding dress.
Okay.
That's how long I've known.
So when I asked Brother Revels, he said he's been close to he's pretty close now to Willis.
Right? Yeah. I've known Willis for 25 years.
Wow.
So that's a long time, and I've known that family for 25 mm-hmm. years. And their mother was just so sweet. You would have loved her.
Mm-hmm.
She was just so sweet and so kind and always smiled and always happy. And she said, I always love you. And I said, I love you too.
Mm-hmm.
But she died, but she went peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had, you know, in between he's had other brothers and sisters to die. And
when I've heard him talk about it, it's just amazing his faith.
He just can't believe it. There's only, I think, two or three of them left.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what happened with your grandparents' family, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They all passed really early.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what happened to my family when they started dying. My father died, then his brother died, mm-hmm. then this aunt that's in the Ebony magazine, she mm-hmm. died, then his sister-in-law died, mm-hmm. and then his cousin died, and then my mother's family started dying. Mm-hmm. And my mother is the oldest, so I think it took its toll when her only sister, it was two girls yeah. and two boys, when the two boys died, and then she had to bury them, mm-hmm. and then her sister died, and that was all she had left from
her past. Yeah, well, when you have a close family, it's like losing mm-hmm. roots.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. So when she went, could go back to Dominica and meet her people, we were just mm-hmm. really so happy. Mm-hmm. And when she was, when we knew she was dying, of course we told them, and they kept calling and calling and saying, we're praying for her, and I didn't want to say she's dying, you know, but they were so mm-hmm. wanting her to live, you know. Yeah. Well, you're going to come back to Dominica, and I had told them she had a heart attack and two strokes before we went to Dominica.
Was she still living in New York all this time, or did she eventually come down and join you here?
Nobody's going to come here. This is no man's land to them. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a relative living or dead in North Carolina. Anywhere in North Carolina.
But all your children are in North Carolina?
My children are in North Carolina. My son is in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
He's in Georgia.
Oh, nice. I'm going there.
Well, he's in Taylor, a place called Taylor. It's near Atlanta. Mm-hmm. But all my other kids live in North Carolina.
Yeah.
And my grandchildren.
Do you know that we went down and visited Pastor Harrison last weekend?
Oh, did you?
Miss Gladys and Mama Willistein. And but they have a picture of you and Brother Revels up on the mantle.
Yeah, we gave them that to take with them. We gave them.
It's like the only photo up on their mantle.
Yeah, we gave it to them and we put it up there when we went there. Yeah, Reverend Harrison's wife, Bernice. I never call her Bernice. I call her Miss B. I have the utmost affection for her, and she is like, she's closer to me than my sister.
Really?
Than my living sister. Mm-hmm. She's just somebody that I love, love, love. And maybe the reason that I love her so much was because when I came there, her children were young. The little girl was little.
Mm-hmm.
Brianna. She was a little girl. She wasn't even in school. Oh,
she's
yes.
She's a big 12-year-old.
Oh, she's a teenager.
Tall.
And so, you know, the people in the church aren't really kind to children. To me, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care if this goes on tape. And so I told her, I said, don't worry about that. I love you. And I just keep telling her I loved her. And so we became good friends. Mm. And we've been friends ever since.
And there's actually an interview of her talking about how hard it was for her and how there were a couple people who really helped her through that journey for her and for her kids.
Yeah.
It's a hard, and, you know, my dad is a pastor, and I know from my mom talking that it's not easy to be a pastor's wife,
and
especially
she
in churches that have, you know.
And she worked so hard in our church. Mm-hmm. Our pastor now is not going to work as half as hard as Reverend Harrison and his wife are.
Yeah.
They actually worked. Yeah. You know, they did the
food
ministry. They did. They really did.
They lived, and, they walked the walk.
And they're in a, did you go to their church?
Yeah.
Isn't it beautiful?
It is. It's a beautiful.
And the people are so nice.
They're very nice.
And welcoming. And they told me, come on down here, you know. Yeah, we'll help you find a house.
Trying to get you to relocate.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I asked Pastor Harrison who the members of St. Joseph, like if there was any member of St. Joseph who'd just been really constant support, without a second said, he said, from the day I got there until the day I left, Robert Revels was there by my side. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and Bernice sounds like would have said the exact same thing about you, and it's such amazing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And her children, every single one of her children went through East except for Brianna.
Really? So you got to watch them.
I was right there. I said, you are not going to get in any trouble because I will tell. Not going to get in any trouble. I will tell. And they were just so sweet and just so kind, and I just wanted them to have a happy experience. Mm-hmm. They didn't always have a happy experience here, but they are blossoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really
are blossoming, and where they are is so nice.
Yeah, they're getting to rest a little bit
yeah,
more.
Yeah, they seem much healthier. And Britain and Brittany are so fun to see where they are now. They're both really
So Brittany has always been, you know, kind of a school buff.
She's a rock.
She's very, very intelligent. She is. And she sticks to those books, and she studies and does all of that. But anyway, getting back to this, I couldn't believe that these soldiers actually had these big hats on. And it was hot. It was hot that day. People say London is not hot. It was hot. You know? It was 81
Global
degrees.
Warming.
Yeah, it was hot. It was nice. You know, all the different, we went to Oxford College. And there's the college. There's me in front of the college. And it was just so nice to see everything. And I said, I'm trying to take this all in. There's the London Bridge. We walked across. Oh, we just had the best time, I'm going to tell you. And the young people were so good to me. Every time I'd get down the stairs, I'd say, well, let me go up and get my luggage. We already put it on the bus. And I didn't have to carry anything. That's Harriet.
Okay.
That's her. And she and her husband were missionaries in Africa. So they were, you know, used to being around people of color.
Mm-hmm.
But that was some of the houses with the thatch roofs.
Like cool cottage.
And you know, this stuff here that they make the roofs out of,
mm-hmm.
it's like mud in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And you dig it up and you put it up there. It's called thatch mm-hmm. roofs. And the people have different color doors in town
mm-hmm.
because they do a lot of drinking. And they have to know which house to go to.
Oh, no.
So
really?
If they have a green door and a red door and an
That's
orange
hilarious.
Door. Yeah. And this was our tour guide.
He's funny looking.
Yeah, he looks like
he was a nut. And these were two people dressed in their costumes from Wales.
Mm-hmm.
And they I said, can I take your picture? They said, yes. And this was where the sheep were, they were herding sheep. All the churches and different, you can see how cloudy it was. Oh, the weather's terrible there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
In Ireland and Wales, it's damp.
Yep, it is.
And cold.
And
you ever read Angela's Ashes?
I haven't, but I think you have, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
And where the siblings keep dying from the damp and cold, it's really damp and cold. Yes,
yeah.
And I wanted to see where this man came from. I said, I have to see this with my eyes.
Wow.
So we went there, we walked through the lanes with the cobblestone.
I went to visit my sister in Scotland one winter, and it was light for like 5 hours a day, you know.
Yeah.
Rainy and...
But in Wales, it stayed... Is it Wales or Ireland? It stayed light till about 11
or 12
o'clock
at night.
Well,
in the summer it does that,
night.
Right?
Yeah.
In the winter.
Yeah, we went in June.
Okay. Yeah.
But you needed winter clothes.
Yeah.
You're just having an amazing
but
story.
But I just was so... I've been so blessed ever since I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is where God wanted me to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have such a good way of putting a positive
light.
Yeah.
I've been so blessed. Mm-hmm. I just have been able to do things that I had never even dreamt that I'd ever go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're raising four kids, you're never thinking you'd ever do anything like that. Well, I've been on about 6 or 7 cruises.
Wow.
I've been to every island in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to Jamaica and all different places.
So you took their advice. You've been traveling.
I've been traveling. Yeah, getting ready to go on another cruise soon.
When?
In about a month.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the Bahamas this time.
Ooh.
Freeport, all in there.
Mm.
I like those islands. I didn't love Jamaica, but I loved the islands. I liked Bermuda. I liked St. Thomas. I liked Nassau.
Yeah, how can you not?
And there's a place called St. Martin. You ever heard of it? Get a chance to go there. Half of the island is Dutch, and half of the island is French.
Funny.
An interesting place.
And it's so nice.
Certainly warmer,
and
right?
The people are so sweet. Well, they're sweet. I like I like to go places where people are nice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I have to catch hell, I can stay here. That's what I always say. But I don't
go farther north. That's we have our own stereotypes about the north.
Yeah, northern people aren't really mean, but they're not friendly.
Yeah.
So it's like that in London, though. Mm-hmm. You know, people are hustling and bustling. They're business people. But
what's the friendliest place you've been?
The friendliest place that I've been, that I've traveled to? Mm-hmm. There's quite a few, but I'd have to say, as far as I'm concerned, was Ireland.
Really?
The people were friendlier there than anywhere else I've ever been.
That's interesting.
That's true. Every Irish person I know, I consider to be happy. Welcoming, happy.
They're just happy. Yeah. And I don't know if it's because of the drinking. They tried to make me drink while I was there.
They've got Guinness running through their
Irish
veins.
Coffee. Always, you know, they say, it's coffee. It's Irish coffee. Well, it's not coffee. Okay?
It's drinking.
It's stout. Yeah. Or whatever you want to call it. And you don't want to drink that. So I'd say no thank you. No thank you. And you have to drink the stout. But they're just so sweet. And they got so used to me. When I came downstairs, there was a store downstairs in the hotel. When I come to the hotel and I'd say I want to go in, the lady would be sitting outside having her coffee or whatever. And I'd say, I'm going in the store to buy a few things. And she'd say, okay, let me know when you get through. And she'd let me go to the store and pick out what I wanted. And then I'd tell her, you know, I couldn't believe it. I said, in America, they're following you around in the store, you know.
So true.
I had that experience, too.
Really?
People following you around in the store.
Watching you.
In Kinston, they would do that. And right before I got ready to leave, somebody was following me around in the store. And I turned around and told the woman, I said, listen, miss, I work every day and I have money. And I buy what I want. You don't need to follow me. You better follow some of these other people because I don't steal. Mm-hmm. And so she said, okay. She didn't think I saw her, but I did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, well, I've worked for Kmart here.
Okay.
I've worked for Belk here.
Okay.
And anywhere I've worked, I can go in there today and they'll say, coming back to work, even though it's been a long time, they still want me to come back.
Mm.
And I think that's sweet.
That's a great testament.
Well, yeah, it's
that's
so much
sweet
about
that they want me to come
what you
back.
Do to your presence does to a whole place. Like the principal said that, you know, how
they
much
want
that
me to
presence
come back.
Is so important.
I love them. And they, and you know, all of my life I have loved everyone. And this was the very first time that I felt that the love was returned to me.
Mm. Mm.
So God let me shower, he showered down all that love on me. And when I got ready to leave, they not only gave me that yearbook, they gave me another one. I got a gold cup in that box, in that blue box there. The superintendent? Mm-hmm. Superintendent of schools spoke on my behalf at a dinner.
Oh, great.
Then they took up a collection to give me a gift card so that I could buy a computer and a printer.
That's great.
Can you believe that?
That's great.
My sister's retired after working 30-something years at a school, and they gave her a cup or something with the years on it. And she said, this is what they gave me. And I said, well, can I tell you what they gave me? And that gift card was just one of many, because I got gift cards
from students, too, probably.
I got from parents. To Eat Out, Cheesecake Factory, Outback, the bookstore. My principal used to always slip me gift cards to the bookstore because he knew I loved to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I read, while I was working in that school, I read almost 50 books a year.
Wow.
Jeez.
I did a lot more reading than I do now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I read a lot.
So Ms. Banks, considering the incredible journey that you've had, and also now that you finally feel like that love has returned, what do you really hope for the next years in your life?
I would like to put something in writing for my children, which I was hoping that my mother would have done that for me. and so they can understand, you know, how my, I think they understand how my life is because they had to live it with me. But maybe they don't understand how I got to this point. And then I would like to do that. And I, as my children get out of my grandchildren get out of school, I like to take them on one nice trip. So if they never go anywhere else or do anything else, they can say, I went visited another country with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. I never left this country until I was 46 years old. Mm-hmm. Never was outside of the United States, not even in a boat. Mm-hmm. So it was thrilling to me. First place I ever went was Freeport, the Bahamas. I flew over there, spent, you know, a couple of days and came back. Mm-hmm. But I would like to do that. And as I read these books, I write. I think of something to write in them to leave for my children and grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Because I said I don't have $1 million to leave them. Mm-hmm. But I can leave them something about somebody that they can. I've already read books that have become movies. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. Oh, I didn't tell you about this. Being that my aunt was doing so many things, we got to see Broadway plays a lot. Mm-hmm. And I got to see A Raisin in the Sun with Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee.
Wow.
I got to see Anita Baker. Not Anita Baker. Josephine Baker. Anita Baker's grandmother, Josephine Baker. Goodness. You know who Josephine Baker was?
I've heard that name.
Okay, well, you can look her up too. And I got to actually see her on Broadway.
That's incredible.
And a lot of other people. I got to meet Muhammad Ali.
You met a lot of folks.
Yeah, I would say. Yeah.
And like I said, Malcolm X, who I used to hide from.
You should say they met you.
Well, no. They were famous at the time because Muhammad Ali was the greatest. He thought he was the greatest.
That's amazing.
And he was a very handsome man. Mm. He used to talk about how good looking he was. He was good looking. He was really good looking. And who else? I never got to meet Martin Luther King, but I got to see him on TV all the time, and I got to witness Kennedy becoming president, John Fitzgerald Kennedy becoming president. I got to see that. I got to witness Queen Elizabeth being crowned.
Wow.
That takes you way back.
Yeah.
That was very true.
Black and white TV. And then Eisenhower became president, and Eisenhower stayed in there 2 terms.
Yeah. I was just looking at a New York Times article that showed Queen Elizabeth shaking every president's hand. Truman and how many different people
she's mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Well, and then and now you've also got to witness Obama's election.
Yes, and that I was hoping that my mother could stay alive to see that, mm-hmm. but she didn't. But me, my sisters, my brother, all of us got to witness President Obama, and my sister kept saying, "He's not going to win," and I said, "You're a doubting Thomas. He's going to win." They're more skeptical than I am. Maybe because I was my daddy's favorite, and so he was fearless, and so was I. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up kind of being. My father said, "Don't be fearful of any man. They just have 2 arms and 2 legs like you do. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's going to do something to you, nobody can stop them." And so when Kennedy got killed, he said, "You know, their president got killed. Nobody can stop, you know. If somebody really wants to kill you, that's what they're going to do." And so I said, I always thought, who would want to kill me? If they really knew me, who would want to kill me? I'm not going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. So, but nowadays people are killing people for no reason, so that's mm-hmm. a little bit different. But I always thought that people that did things like that, there was something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. So I have a forgiven spirit. It hasn't been easy. I had to pray about some forgiveness. Mm. So I prayed for 2 years to forgive my husband. Mm. And so I forgave him.
It's remarkable.
And I didn't ever talk hateful about him. My children were not brought up in hate. They love everybody, and they're just like I am.
Did you share a lot with them, or were they? Did you try to kind of like your parents share more of the positive things along the way?
What started it was this grandson there started asking me how things were back in the day. And when I started telling him, he said, "Well, you should have done this and you should have done that." I said, "You would have probably done that, but back then we were respectful,
right. Mm-hmm.
And we were, you know, if your parents said not to do something, you didn't do it."
Mm. Miss Banks, you
so remarkable. You didn't. You just didn't do it,
mm-hmm.
And people wouldn't believe that. But I was a grown woman, and my parents told me I couldn't have company in the house. I was working, making my own money. I couldn't have company in the house when they weren't there. I'd have to sit outside on the porch.
Mm-hmm.
That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
But they were just that strict, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm.
No hanky panky was going to be going on. They didn't understand you could go somewhere else in hanky panky, but
yeah. You know, I might have to see if sometime. I just feel like there's an endless amount. Even like you just opened so many doors that I have a follow up with you at some time because I would love to hear.
Well,
more.
Is there anything special you want to hear about?
Well, I just feel like there's a million things that it's.
Hudson
made
never
me,
runs out of questions.
I never run out of questions.
But you know what?
And they say that you don't ever. It's always rude to keep somebody longer than 2 hours trying
well,
to tell
I'm
their
gonna
stories.
Well, I'm going to go to church with you. That's why I'm trying to pause for time so you can shut it off if you want. But I was going to tell you a little thing about faith. If you ever have faith, if you were brought up having faith, you never lose that faith.
Mm.
Even though sometimes you believe that you're praying and your prayers aren't being answered for some reason, but you never stop believing that God's listening. I prayed for 14 years for God to get me out of a situation. But sometimes God lets you stew in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You don't always do what's right, and you know you're not doing what's right. And then when you come back to Him and you ask Him for something, He's going to let you stew for a while because He's going to see if you really trust Him and believe Him like you should. And so I don't, even when I was at rock bottom, and when I mean rock bottom, I considered myself a roach crawling along the ground. That's how I looked at myself. I said, nothing is lower than me than a roach crawling along on the ground. I am working 2 and 3 jobs. I'm coming home. I'm growing my own vegetables, chopping and hoeing out there. Now, I'm from New York. I never did this stuff in New York, okay? I went to school to work every day to RCA with my little gloves and my little pocketbook and shoes to match and all of that. Never had to do any dirty work. Not like that. I get down here and I'm having to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And my children are going to school and I'm calling myself advocating for them. So I started working in the PTA and all of that. And just so I could keep up with what my children were doing and what they were learning and getting some books in the schools
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
people of color and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so I thought, well, you know, my children are going to grow up one day and they're going to be somebody and that's going to make me happy. I would never thought my children will grow up and they'll take care of me. I never felt like that. I felt if they just took care of their children half as good as I did mm-hmm. with them, that I'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, after a while, God sneaks a little blessing in there. And then He sneaks another blessing in there.
Mm.
And after a while, you look around and you have so much stuff. See, I got too much stuff now. But He just keeps blessing you. And this particular year, I wouldn't say this particular year. Ever since I went to ESO, I'd say it started 10 years ago. When I was able to go to Europe, I just couldn't believe that I was able to go there. Then the next year I took another trip, and the next year it was another trip, and then my daughter already had a big house then, and then my other daughter got a house in Raleigh, and my son was living in Goldsboro, he had a house. And I just was, you know, I just was in disbelief that all this could be so wonderful. Mm-hmm. I was living in what was called Shannon Manor. It's now something else. It was across the street from what is used to be South Square Mall. Mm-hmm. Those beautiful apartments over there, that's where I was living. And I lived there for 8 years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then my daughter said, you come live with us, with me and my husband. They only had the one child. And you can stay on the bottom floor and we'll live on the top floor. So I went and lived with her for a while until I decided I was going to be on my own. Mm. But he just keeps blessing you. Mm. And blessing you and blessing you and blessing you. Mm-hmm. And I was, and I will never forget a nun overhearing, because I shouldn't have been listening. There was this lady talking to a nun, a Catholic nun, and she said, sister, do you believe that God answers prayer? And do you know what the nun told her? God doesn't have time, and there's too many people in the world now. That he can't, she doesn't believe that he listened to prayer. Now, meanwhile, I'm praying with all my might, you know, that I'm able to accomplish all that I'm doing with these children. Mm-hmm. And this nun is going to say that God doesn't answer prayer.